proportion.
It's time for Nicholas Snow Live, the podcast that's all about connecting the circuitry of humanity. Connect with us at NicholasSnowLive.com. It's not radio. It's Gadio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nicholas Snow Live for May 12, 2015. It is 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. You know, the theme of my show is connecting the circuitry of humanity, and a lot of the topics of my show are targeted toward the LGBT community. I'm going to out my guest as a heterosexual. So for all you gay guys out there who might fall in love, just know in advance that it's not going to happen. But he was influenced in his early career by a very famous gay artist, Keith Haring. And my guest doesn't know this, but I'm literally sitting next to a signed poster by Keith Haring for National Coming Out Day. At any rate, the theme of this show, from homelessness to international art star, the reinvention of Peter Mikulak. Now, I'm based in the Coachella Valley in Palm Springs, California. My audience is worldwide, but there's a great writer locally. Her name is Rebecca Pikus, and she wrote a fantastic profile of Peter. And this episode is actually linked to the entire story at CoachellaValleyWeekly.com. At any rate, she writes that Peter Mikulak is an extraordinary artist who went from a thriving contracting business to going belly up and losing everything in the market crash, to becoming homeless, to reinventing himself through digital art drawing, street art, and paintings, to arrive now as a beloved Palm Springs artist and an international star in the art world. What could be a better rise from the ashes phoenix story? His work is riveting, erotic, in-your-face, confrontational, intellectual, diverse, and beautiful, but all at the same time, and his colors and imagery are amazing. So that's what Rebecca Pikus had to say about Peter, and we're going to learn what he has to say about himself after this.
I want to give a big shout-out of thanks to all my advertisers. You'll hear the commercials during the show. If this episode had a presenting sponsor, you would be hearing their commercial right now at the beginning of the show. For information on how to secure this sponsorship, or for the contact information for all my advertisers, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on the Advertisers link in the main sub-menu. Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
New designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revival. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revival. Find it here. Visit us at RevivalStores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert Age Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the snow, show, celebrating his fourth decade as a multimedia entertainment activist. Producer and host Nicholas Snow is all about honoring and expressing his life force in a way that makes a difference, while inspiring you to do the same. Reaching millions of people worldwide, Nicholas is definitely a leading primo promo homo on the go-go. Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just drifted into your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
And today we talk about Peter Mikulak, who's gone from homelessness to international art star. And I quoted Rebecca Pikus for the Coachella Valley Weekly, who describes him as an extraordinary artist, but I know this myself. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Peter. How's it going today?
Very well, thank you.
So you mentioned this is the first time you've done a radio interview, and there have been a lot of firsts in your life recently. You just ended a triumphant trip back to Palm Springs for El Paseo Fashion Week, or Fashion Week El Paseo. Why don't you talk about what happened for you there?
Sure. Janet Newcomb, which is my rock, she's a publicist in Palm Springs. Through social media and the amazing Facebook and how it connects people, we bumped into each other on Facebook, and I reached out to her, and we started to go back and forth, and she decided to start nurturing my career and giving me some guidance. And when she saw my commitment, my diligence, my inspiration, my enthusiasm, she reached out to some of the power forces in Palm Springs, and one of them was Susan Stein, the event coordinator of Fashion Week El Paseo. Susan Stein gave me a call one afternoon. I just looked down at my phone, and it was an unfamiliar number. She introduced herself, and she offered me an opportunity. And it's an opportunity you can't say no to. It was completely out of my realm. She offered me a situation where I could embellish my art on the backdrops for the merchants on El Paseo that were showing during El Paseo Rocks. And it was a challenge. They all had to be similar in style, but each one stand out specifically to their own. Match the style, the clothing lines, you know what I mean? I had to incorporate the proper colors. So as they were walking down, the backdrops complemented the fashion. So it was a challenge, and I pretty much stopped everything else and gave it my full attention. I got to Palm Springs, and the day before El Paseo Rocks, they changed the format of the LED screen at the base of the runway, so I actually had to start from scratch. And I... It was pretty amazing, but in a way it was a blessing, because once I was there and I was in the tent and I was in the atmosphere, I had a better idea and a better feel for, you know, what was expected. And, you know, the original work was done here in Connecticut, which is where I'm at now. And it was actually a blessing in disguise.
Well, congratulations. I didn't make it to Fashion Week El Paseo, but I did enjoy the event on Facebook with the countless people I'm connected to online that were there. Let's go back to your youth. You were I frankly know what I'm about to ask you, because Rebecca Pikus did such a great job interviewing you, and I wanted just to acknowledge her work for giving me great material. But you were originally inspired to paint a public mural because you lost a close friend when you were a young boy?
It was what we call Chalk Night here in Connecticut. It's Mischief Night, the night before Halloween. I was, I think, in seventh grade, junior high school, and I was just walking out of a friend's house, and I heard screeching tires, looked up the street, and just saw it happen as it was happening. I just saw a body flying a good 30, 40 yards into the air, and when it hit the ground, there was no movement. So, you know, all the kids from the neighborhood ran to see what happened and who it was, and sure enough, it was, you know, one of my hanging buddies, and it was very overwhelming. It was a hard time for the whole neighborhood, and the gentleman that owned the convenience store in our neighborhood allowed me to do a memorial on the side of his building, and that was actually the very first time I ever took spray paint to a building.
Do you have photographs of that?
Oh, my goodness. I wish I did. I really wish I did. It made the paper, and I mean, I'm 45 years old, and, you know, through my travels, I've lost so many amazing pieces of art and archival material. And I don't know, maybe I should do the footwork just to see if our Bristol Press local newspaper might even have that. That would be a blessing.
It's very likely that that does exist archivally somewhere, and that would be a really powerful thing to have. So another influence, and once again, thanks to Rebecca for this, was Keith Haring, which I found fascinating because I didn't know that about you. So tell me about how you discovered Keith and his work.
Absolutely. I was in sixth grade, and my father had the day off, and we had the day off from school, me and my sisters. So we packed us up in the car, and he took us to Manhattan, New York for our very first experience. I remember like it was yesterday. Beverly Hills Cop just came out, and, you know, the Axel Foley theme was playing on the radio, and Sade, Smooth Operator. And as we pulled into the city, I just noticed these chalk drawings everywhere. I'm everywhere. I mean, straight across Manhattan, everywhere you look, Keith Haring was there. And it made it just, it was profound. It was very profound. As profound as the work was, it was profound that it was evident that somebody physically did that with chalk, one image at a time, from one side of Manhattan all the way to the other. We started on 125th Street in Harlem, and my father took us all the way to Canal Street, right next to the Brooklyn Bridge in Chinatown, and it was everywhere. The following year, I went to a junior high school, and in my seventh grade art class, there was a book called Art in Transit. I picked up that book, and it was the same images I saw throughout Manhattan, and that was the connection. And because I saw it live, I felt like I participated in something. So I started to follow him, and he was everywhere, and, you know, he just went from a non-existent, passionate artist to, you know, internationally known. And it was very attractive. And, you know, the celebrity that he became, you know, it played a force. He was able to do a lot of good and go a lot of places he wouldn't have been able to go and express himself artistically without his celebrity. And that is very attractive to me today. And I truly believe through my art, in my passion, you know, down the road, some of the things that are passionate to me personally, I will be able to make more of an impact.
So tell me how you ended up sort of leaving art and becoming a general contractor.
Well, it's the same story for most people. You know, when you're a child and you're in your teens, you have passions, you have dreams, and, you know, once we get to adulthood, you know, the responsibilities of real life on life's terms and having children, those things get put on the back burner, and then eventually they just get taken off the stove. And, you know, I just went through a lot of trials and tribulations. My family moved from the East Coast to the West Coast the year before I graduated my high school, which was a major culture shock. I had a 4-year scholarship to go to school in New York. And because my family moved, I lost my eligibility for my scholarship, which was devastating. And to this day, I could only imagine where my art career would be if I was, you know, engrossed in New York City for 4 years as an art student. But, you know, eventually, you know, the dreams, the recurring dreams of me painting and waking up and feeling like I actually really did a painting and feeling all the feelings and emotions of doing that painting, I started to dabble. And, you know, being a general contractor, it had all my attention. Running a very large crew in Southern Connecticut, down in the Yale University area. And, you know, after 10 years of dealing with the same companies and investors, things started to get shady and shaky. And, you know, those people that I relied on Thursdays to pay my people on Fridays were missing in action. One day I just got out the shower and I looked at myself in the mirror and my hands just started to raise. And, you know, I had no control over them. I just looked at myself dead in the eyes and I just said, it's a wrap. You know, I'm just not going to make it to work today. If I'm going to struggle, I'm going to struggle doing something I love. I called my partner and I told him, if you want it, it's yours. And right after I got off the phone with him, I called the Salvation Army. They showed up 2 days later with a big truck, and I donated every single thing that I owned except one suitcase of clothes and a backpack that I still have. I'm actually staring at it now, full of art supplies. I took my SUV. I drove to my youngest daughter's grandmother's house. I handed her the key, and they dropped me off at Union Station in New Haven with $500 in my pocket. I jumped on a Greyhound bus, and I chanted from New Haven, Connecticut, all the way to Grand Central Station, no plan B, you know, basically saying there is no plan B. You know, at my age, I'm either going to make it as an artist or I'm going to die trying. And I truly believe, you know, people that make a plan B, that's giving them an escape route. And, you know, that gives them something to fall back on. When there is no plan B, by all means necessary, You force yourself and make those major commitments to actually make it happen. And, you know, my grandiose thinking, you know, I'm a good businessman and I'm talented. I should be able to put this together in 6 to 8 months. And that definitely wasn't the case. I ran through my money quicker than I could think, and things got really tough and I became homeless. And, you know, at that time, as smart, as intelligent, and, you know, as well-spoken as I was, and as easy as it would have been for me to acquire some type of employment, I made the decision not to, because I've already had the experience of taking my art and putting it on the back burner, you know, and I convinced myself, no plan B, and if I need to earn a dollar, it's going to be through my art. If my art doesn't make me a dollar, then I just won't have one. And after a while, when your pockets get really stressed out and things really, you know, push comes to shove, you know, it's amazing how you can create opportunity. And that's what I did for myself.
That's really quite amazing. You know, one of my favorite quotes is by Goethe, who said, whatever you can do or dream you can do, whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now. When we come back, I'm going to ask Peter about how a move of generosity was a turning point in his life. It had to do with a particular Thanksgiving and how Peter wanted to help out his neighbors after this.
Did you know I'm an author? At the time of this recording, I have two books out. The first, A Living Powerfully with HIV Memoir, called Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. It takes place throughout Asia and even in Palm Springs. It could be called Eat, Pray, Disclose. The second book, A Return to Brokeback Mountain, Photos and Interviews from the Historic Hollywood Premiere. To find these titles, go to NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Books in the main submenu. Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
In Greater Palm Springs, since 1979, the Desert Business Association has promoted and supported LGBT and allied businesses and professionals who join together for business promotion, economic development, educational, and humanitarian purposes. Their vision is to connect, promote, and build prosperity by embracing all members of the community to make a positive difference. They have many events every month. Find them at desertbusinessassociation.com.
This is Nicholas Snow Live, connecting the circuitry of humanity. Connect with us at NicholasSnowLive.com. It's not radio, it's gadio.
As Rebecca Pikus wrote for the Coachella Valley Weekly, Peter Mikulak is an extraordinary artist who went from a thriving contracting business to going belly up and losing everything in the market crash, to becoming homeless, to reinventing himself through digital art, drawing, street art, and paintings, to arrive as a beloved Palm Springs artist and an international star in the art world. What could be a better rise from the ashes phoenix story? His work is riveting, erotic, in-your-face, confrontational, intellectual, diverse, and beautiful all at the same time, and his colors and imagery are amazing. So, Peter, how did you end up in Palm Springs specifically?
My parents owned a chain of audio video stores here in Connecticut called Tungstus Electronics. When I was a junior in high school, being a busybody, not really focused on, you know, what was going on at home, always out and about with friends, I just remember my father was just gone. And, you know, it wasn't until after he left I realized he wasn't there. He left for California, Palm Springs specifically, to set up shop. He found his first location next to Lumpy's in Cathedral City, and he opened up, you know, his new location, selling home stereo and car stereo, and came back. We packed up the entire house, and we drove across country. We landed in Palm Desert Country Club off of Fred Waring. And this was the summer before my senior year.
So when you were back in Connecticut and you were walking away from the contracting business and getting on that bus and train and with no plan B, how did you end up returning to Palm Springs?
I was familiar with the lay of the land. You know what I mean? I had.
So this was your first destination then? This is where you were headed?
That was my specific destination. I had friends that offered me, you know, a place. They saw my passion. They saw my love for art. They saw me, you know, in my early 20s when I first, you know, came to California, being very passionate. And that's what they knew me for. You know, I've always been known as an artist. And they just saw that I was really serious about making a career change. And they offered me shelter for, you know, a period of time to get started. And, you know, that lasted for a little while. And then after that, when it was time to move on, that's when things really got tough.
So that's when you ended up on the street. Did your family, people were helping you, just decide that you weren't being responsible and that that's why they didn't want to help you anymore? They felt like they were enabling you and that you needed to stand up on your own 2 feet?
It's funny. As far as I've come down the road, they still think I'm irresponsible, and they just still think there's a million artists out there. You're never going to make it. You know, go get something that's secure and, you know, be able to support yourself and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, me personally, I'm not impressed with somebody that has, you know, the nice house and the picket fence and, you know, the 2 cars. And, you know, because at the end of the day, if you're a slave to your job and it's something that you're not passionate about and, you know, you're dealing with a household that's, you know, you're not having really healthy relationships inside the household, and, you know, you're just waking up every day just to go through the motions, and that's just not who I am, you know.
It's kind of like people in that situation are sort of already dead.
Yeah. You know, I've conditioned myself to live by, you know, with very few, you know, items. I could pack up my whole life in a half hour and relocate at any given time. I keep things very simple. I don't need a lot of things, you know, as long as I have, you know, my uniform, which is my paint clothes, and a decent outfit or two, and my art supplies, that's all I need. I haven't owned a car in almost 7 years. I don't need one. And, you know, I've never had an issue getting anywhere in this United States, you know, to just things. But my life
so
is full.
My audience, you know, there's a strong LGBT audience, but I have a big following among the mainstream. And audience will find it in particular inspiring that you were inspired by Keith Haring, but also I think everyone will get a kick out of the significance Marilyn Monroe has had in your career. So take me to that particular Thanksgiving and tell us what happened, and also what year was it? It wasn't too long ago, I know that.
Oh, it was the year that they did the unveiling. You know, I was there that day for the unveiling.
So let's explain what the unveiling is. So there was a statue of called Forever Marilyn that was installed in downtown Los Angeles. Excuse me, downtown Palm Springs.
Yeah.
And it immediately became an international media sensation. The sculpture had been in Chicago, and it ended up in Palm Springs. And I think that the juxtaposition of Marilyn, that Marilyn against the mountains of Palm Springs, was, you know, incredibly just incredibly powerful. So it would have been in 2012 that she was unveiled, and then the Times reported on March 31st of 2014, "Forever Marilyn, the 3-story-tall sculpture by artist Seward Johnson, will be dismantled this week so that the leggy tourist attraction can be shipped to its next location, the grounds for sculpture in central New Jersey." So that's a little bit of background about Forever Marilyn. So at any rate, it's Thanksgiving. You and your friends are hungry. What happened?
Okay. I was looking for purpose with my work. I was looking for, you know, something that was consistent. So I was considering doing it. But before Thanksgiving, I just didn't have the cojones. I didn't have the heart. I didn't have the courage just to create art in front of a live audience. You know, most artists are very comfortable in their studio, and that's what they create. Thanksgiving morning, by this time I was a little more stable. I wasn't homeless anymore. I was actually living off of Tockowitz right next to the airport in Mojave Blue. And there was these 2 adorable little kids that were being taken care of by their grandmother that lived next door. And on Thanksgiving morning, I was throwing out the garbage, and the little boy was outside, and I would always horseplay and mess around with him. And I just asked him plainly, "Are you getting ready for some turkey dinner?" And he looked down at the ground. His whole demeanor changed. And what he said next, you know, changed everything. Oh, my God, I'm getting emotional. He said, "My grandmother's on the phone trying to get us money so we can go to McDonald's." And I knew because of, you know, the parent addiction and, you know, the domestic issues that surrounded that household, I knew exactly why they didn't have food on Thanksgiving morning. It empowered me. I went in the house. I told my significant other, "Babe, I'll be right back." And she's like, "Where are you going? The food's almost ready." And I said, "I will be right back." I took my easel. I took my toolbox. I put it in the car. And I was less than a mile from the statue. I remember I turned on some Led Zeppelin to get my heart pumping. And I pulled over on the side of the statue between Starbucks and the statue. And when I looked over, there was a good 300-400 people Thanksgiving morning standing around that statue taking pictures. All of that empowerment went out the window. I was scared to get out the car. And I just sat there. And the longer I sat there, the more I was convincing myself to turn around and go home than I was to convince myself to get out the car. And then I just said, "Wait a minute. Your work is good, Peter." And I thought of that little boy's precious face and that beautiful woman that has done so much for me. And she was so encouraging. I said, "What's the worst that can happen? They're going to boo you." So I was all shaky and nervous, and I just set up, and, you know, I finally got my easel in place, you know, got my board up, and I started shaking and rattling my first can, and I just started creating. I was focused on my board, but I could hear everything going on behind me, and I just heard people saying, "Oh, wow, kids, look at over there," or, "Honey, look at the artist," and, "Ooh, wow, amazing." And what I wasn't prepared for is for somebody to actually walk up to me and ask me, "Are you selling those? How much?" So I just threw a number out there, and that was pretty much the number I stuck to until I finished. And within an hour, hour and a half, I had quite a few $100s in my pocket. I jumped in the car, and I drove to Sunrise for the Fresh and Easy, and I filled almost 4 baskets full of food. And I knocked on that woman's door, and I filled her cupboards and her refrigerator. By the time I got home, I was just so high on the experience. It was just so amazing. It was the first time I ever did live performance art. I got paid for doing it. I got all the affirmations and confirmations that I needed that my work was good. And I fed my neighbors on Thanksgiving. It was so amazing. I'm like, "I'm going to do this again tomorrow." So I did. And the following day, it was the same success. So I went back the next day, and it was the same success. And after about a week, because, you know, the media was constantly down there, you know, using the statue as a backdrop for local news, eventually one of the reporters from KESQ introduced himself, and they said, "We're here to see you." And I was like, "Well, it's about time." I was wishing and hoping, and because they were always down there, and because my work was really great, and I was such a spectacle, you know, eventually they'd show up, and they did, an amazing story. And I want to thank Rich, you know, the producer at KESQ.
Rich Tarpening.
For allowing that to happen. Excuse me?
Rich Tarpening.
Yes, he's an amazing gentleman. I really appreciate him for doing that for me. So they ran the story. The following day, 16 people showed up at the statue just because they saw me on the news. And, you know, I just continued. A week later, you know, KMIR came down and they did a little spot. And the following day, the same momentum. And a week later, Bill Feingold, this isn't actually my first radio show. This is actually my first radio show where I'm not sitting in the studio.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. So the Bulldog, he invited me down, and I did talk radio with him. And there's another story tied to that, but if we have time, I'll share it.
We have time.
With you.
Go for it.
Oh, okay. last January, the Westfield Mall in Palm Desert offered me an opportunity to set up a kiosk because I had a very successful kiosk here at our local mall. So I contacted the Westfield Mall, and when I got a phone call back, this woman, she's like, "Peter Mikulak, when I heard you wanted to come to the mall, I was so excited." She's like, "The general manager, everybody's on board. We have specific placing for you. We have amazing ideas." And at the end of the day, I'm like, okay. So I came across country for a business meeting, and I put together a team, and they were offering me a franchise of 24 locations across the United States of America. But that woman knew who I was because on her way to work that morning, I was on Bill's show. She heard me on the air. So when her family came into Palm Springs, she's like, "Whoa, let's go downtown. There's this amazing artist." So she sat with her family, and she actually watched me create work. So it was like full circle. It's kind of special. She knew who I was before I knew who she was.
I love that. That's really, really powerful. So yeah. I know that you may not there's something else that's potentially going to happen for you that's really big. I know you've shared it. You've shared about it on Facebook. I don't know if you want to talk about it now. But if you do want to talk about it now, you're welcome to talk about
Absolutely,
this possibility.
Absolutely, because I truly believe when you put things out there into the universe, that's the way it happens. And it's biblical, speaking things into existence. So what are you referring to specifically?
Television.
Okay. A sweet young lady that was one of the publicists for the Indian Wells Arts Festival, which I just participated. I was one of the featured artists and walked away with a ribbon for my portraits, actually. It was her job to promote. And when I came into town, she sat down with me just to get a little bit of background information, you know, just to help promote me and the festival. When I got back to Connecticut, she just suggested that it was finally time for me not to just rely on Facebook, but to actually get a Twitter account. She actually even set it up for me. It was too overwhelming for me to even do that. So she set it up for me, and all I did was just post pictures and links to some of my interviews. 3 days after I set up my Twitter account, I got a phone call from this woman from Hollywood, and she was the secretary of an Emmy Award-winning producer. She wanted to know if the following day I'd be willing to set up a conference call, and of course I said yes. The following day, gentleman called me, and it was amazing. This man just let me run my mouth for a good 15, 20 minutes. And when I was finished, he heard every single word I said. And he was so inspired by the same story that I'm sharing with you that he wanted to come to Connecticut, meet me in person, and see if he could work with me and pitch me to the network. So he was giving me a 2 to 3 week timeline. 24 hours after I talked to him for the first time, I got another phone call. "Peter, can you meet us this Friday in Manhattan?" So this was on a Tuesday. Wednesday, I just wanted to clear my mind and spiritually, mentally prepare myself for this huge opportunity. So I took the train to Albany, New York, just to meditate and just get away from my studio. And from there, I took the train into Manhattan. And we were supposed to meet at this little restaurant, and at the last minute, he decided to send me a text and say, "Meet me at the Plaza Hotel." I've never been to the Plaza Hotel, but I've heard about it, and I'm like,
"Did you suddenly wish that you had worn something else?"
for real, because I felt so out of place. But anyways, I got into town, and I'm pacing up and down the sidewalk waiting for him. And he sent me a text, "Listen, there's reservations, go inside." So I walked inside, and as soon as I walked inside, I said, "Yeah, I think I'll just wait in the lobby for him." So he sent me another text saying, "Right outside, be right in." So I peeked my head out the door, and he's actually exchanging numbers with Regis. I'm like, wow. So he sits down in the lobby. I show him my portfolio, and I actually went online and I got a really cool picture of him and his significant other. And I surprised him with some of my portrait work, which was really cool. We sat down at the table, and, you know, the first thing he said was, listen, you don't have to sell yourself to me. I wouldn't be here on the other side of the country buying you lunch at the Plaza if I didn't believe in this. This is the producer of Fear Factor, Extreme Home Makeover, Iron Chef, and LA Inc. And his credentials are stood up. I did the research. I had my people in Palm Springs do some research. I was just praying and hoping that this isn't some scam, and just to get my, you know, hopes and wishes and get all excited, just for it to turn out to be some, you know, something other than what it was being sold to be. And, you know, I signed a contract for 6 months. His entertainment company is solely, exclusively pitching me to all the major networks. And they call it what's called remote wars. A remote war is when the kids want to watch cartoons and, you know, the wife wants to watch her stories and the husband wants to watch sports. I'm considered something that the whole family can sit and watch together. And that's something that the networks are interested in. And for the fact that he is an Emmy Award-winning producer, anything that he brings to the table, you know, they'll definitely give some attention. So, you know, any day now I'm going to get that first call and there's going to be a ticket at Bradley International and I'll be bouncing back and forth across country meeting executives from all the networks until hopefully somebody signs me and there will be a miniseries or a movie for TV of the exact same story I was just sharing with you.
There's three questions that I want to conclude with. When you got back on that Thanksgiving day after telling your significant other that you would be right back and then you ended up being gone for hours, was she at first upset with you?
Yes. When I walked in the door, I thought I was getting dog food for Thanksgiving. But I was so emotional. I was just flooded with tears. I was just so overwhelmed with what just happened. And I'm a sensitive man, and I was just flowing with tears of joy, and it was just so amazing, you know what I mean? Just every aspect of what just happened, the live performance, you know, people actually liking my work enough to come out their pocket and purchase it, you know, helping my neighbors and paying it forward. It was just amazing. It was electric, and she felt all of that energy in me, and it silenced her immediately. And she embraced it. It was amazing because, you know, as she was going to work every day, pretty much holding things down and, you know, hoping and praying that eventually something was going to happen for me. And when it did, you know, no longer, you know, was she, you know, making ends meet by herself, and things started to go pretty good.
Okay. The next question is, what is the best website for people to go to find you?
I think the best way to find me is on Facebook. You know, any artwork that you want to see, I post daily. You know, I don't use Facebook to show people what I ate last night or you know, this, that, any other. It's specifically my tool for marketing myself and my art. So if you want to see my work, if you want to contact me, the best way to do that is through Facebook.
Okay, and your art is part of the online layout of this podcast, but for people that haven't noticed, your last name is spelled M-I-K-U-L-A-K, Peter Mikulak. So my final question, long or short answer, it's up to you. What words of wisdom would you like to share with people to help give them permission to identify and follow their dreams?
That's a very good question, and a lot of that, for me personally, has to do with the gay community and something that I learned when I did come to Palm Springs. In Palm Springs, because of, you know, the gay community, people are comfortable in their own skin. Regardless of what other people from the outside, their prejudices and this, that, and the other, if you're downtown Palm Springs, you see gay men, you see gay women, holding hands, loving on each other, and just being who they are. And that was so attractive to me. You know, even though I'm straight, that wasn't the message. The message was be comfortable in your own skin. Find what you're good at, create a passion and direction behind it, and go full force. No plan B, you know, and that's the easiest and best way I can say it. You know, just own who you are. It's what God created to be you, and you're special, unique, all to yourself. Own it. Own it. 100 miles an hour, just own it. You know, and once you're comfortable in your own skin, it's empowering. You know, there was a time when, you know, it was embarrassing. I'm an artist. Yeah, well, are you in a gallery? Or when did you sell a piece and this, that, and the other? All of those things weren't going on, but that didn't mean I wasn't an artist, you know? And it just built, and it was progression and sticking to it and moving forward and, you know, making great contacts like yourself and just following through and doing things with integrity and just sticking to your guns.
Well, that's beautifully said. I don't think there's anything more to add. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today, and I look forward to meeting you in person. I know it seems like we're old friends, and in a way we are, but we haven't actually met in the real world yet. So I look forward to when that happens, and really congratulations, and thank you for sharing your story.
I'll be out there next month, Nicholas. I'm working with some designers out of Canada, and I'm creating a line for their fall handbags. And I'll be doing my artistic embellishments on their products for their fall line. I'm coming out to Palm Springs to execute the whole project, so we'll spend some time.
That sounds fantastic. And once again, congratulations on everything.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I've been speaking with Peter Mikulak, from homelessness to international art star. And it's very exciting. And I really, there's nothing more to add to this interview. And I except listen to it again, because there are lots of pearls of wisdom. See you next time.
You've been listening to Nicholas Snow Live. Find all of our advertisers and everything Nicholas Snow at NicholasSnowLive.com. Nicholas uses both Twitter and Facebook to alert listeners just as he's going on the air. Anytime, 24/7, you may direct tweet at TheNicholasSnow or post your questions, comments, breaking news, and gossip on the Nicholas Snow Live Facebook page. Nicholas may very well discuss your tweet or comment on the air when communicating with or about the show using any form of social media. Be sure to use the hashtag NicholasSnowLive. You may also Skype into live broadcast from anywhere in the world. For Skype instructions and to review all the Connect with Show options I've just mentioned, simply visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click Connect with the Show in the main submenu. Nicholas also broadcasts regular video chats and interviews on his YouTube channel using Google Hangouts. So subscribe at YouTube.com/SnowBizNow. That's YouTube.com/SnowBizNow. For all of his social media links, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Social Networks in the main submenu. This show is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. All rights reserved. Thank you for being a part of the snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.